I'm Eric Ken with TS Designs, and thank you for inviting me down here. I'm from that other county west of here, Alamance County, but it is exciting. The interesting topic of sustainability is getting out. I'll be a speaker next week at a chamber event in Alamance County, so we're learning about green over there, believe it or not. I guess my introduction to sustainability, let me back a little further than that. We're in the printed t-shirt business. That's what we do. My partner started business about 30 years ago. About 13 years ago, our wake-up call to sustainability was NAFTA. Prior to NAFTA, we did business for Tommy, Nike, Gap, Polo, a very successful business. 20,000 square foot building, employed over 100 people. Everything was fine. We made money, our employees were paid well, and everything was great. NAFTA came along, North American Free Trade Agreement. Within 2 years, we lost 90% of our business, our customers. We went from a staff of over 100 to a staff of about 14, and we did the bankruptcy dance a few times, but never went into bankruptcy, came very close to it. But my partner and I were committed to go a different path. We were fortunate to have a good friend, Sam Moore, that helped us later develop a printing and dye technology. We have patents on to print our t-shirts. And Sam came to us, we were really struggling, what are we going to do? Because prior to that, you know, we didn't know what global competition was. You know, we could compete in the U.S. very well. We were one of Nike's three printers in the country. And a year prior to NAFTA, got all his awards and all his accolades for all the great work we did, and watch our business go south. But anyway, I'll talk more about that in a second. But Sam came to us and says, you know, you need to look at this sustainable business model. Again, if you went back 12, 13 years ago, sustainability wasn't anybody's vocabulary, much less a triple bottom line. Being that we live in a capitalist society, we all know about the bottom line and the importance of bottom line. We got to make money. We got bank loans. We got building improvements. Got to make money. But Sam came to us and says, you need to look at this model because for whatever reason, we've always had a care for our employees. Our employees are our most valuable asset since the day we've been in business. We've had some type of health care, some type of retirement plan. Our health care plan sucks right now. We'll spend more time on that. But we have health care for our employees and retirement. For whatever reason, I've always had a care for our impact to the environment. We were doing recycling probably 15 or 16 years ago. We probably stopped using styrofoam cups 15 years ago. But we treat them as three separate entities, just something that I wanted to do for the environment. We did a thing for the employees, and we struggled to make a profit. So I spent about a year going out and hearing the Paul Hawkins, Amory Lovins, the Ray Andersons, and all these kind of early thinkers in sustainability. Came back, sat down with my partner, and we redefined our mission statement. And our mission statement is to be a successful company while simultaneously looking after our people, our employees, our customers, our suppliers, and you, our community. The bottom line, our profits, and the planet. So we call it the three P's, people, profit, planet. Everything we do as a business, both a service, a product, we always have to ask the question, what's the environmental and social impact of the decision we're getting ready to make? Since that time, today, our product is 95% domestically made organic cotton. 60% of that is made in North Carolina. Our business will probably double this year. We restored profitability to TS Design in 06, thank goodness, because the banks had cut us off. There was no more money. My partner and I were out of money. The bank said no more money. So 06, so we've totally flipped the business upside down. We are a successful business, and I think what drives me is not the fact that t-shirts is how we make our money, but we are successful on a triple bottom line. There's not one company out there that is 100% sustainable, probably never will be in our lifetime. We are still taking, as Lyle said, early day, we definitely are taking out more than we're putting back in, but I describe sustainability as a journey, not a destination. And we're on this path, and we continue to learn and improve. And it's been an exciting path. I mean, now that, you know, if you would come to our plant 3 years ago, talk to a typical employee, they would be worried about their job, they worry about their hours, they worry about their friend that just got laid off. You look in our plant, and the few boxes you would see would be conventional cotton made Honduras or China, wherever. You come in our plant today, ask a typical employee, that pretty much we've given significant raises across the board in the last 6 months. Most of them are probably looking for time off because most people are working overtime. There's more boxes in their space. And what's interesting, as the community grows, it makes our story a lot easier to tell. Because when we first got started with this process, our product cost more. It's organic cotton, it's domestically made. For instance, our base t-shirt is $10. You can go out and buy a conventional cotton Plastisol printed t-shirt for $5. So in the early days when we went out and tried to talk to people, it was a hard sale. And especially with the brands and stuff, because they were more interested in selling you. And again, I'll just pick, it could be Nike, it could be Tommy, it could be Polo, it could be Gap, any of the brands. They were interested in selling you the brand. You, me, the consumer, never asked a question, where is it made, how is it made, what's the environmental and social impact? So they're going to make it the cheapest place they can because it's going to improve their bottom line. And what it's interesting, we have tons of people come to our facility. From I had a group of elementary homeschool kids last week to a group of Elon students. We got 75 kids from another science. They're always there, and we'll talk about facility in a second. But I always tell at the end of the day, the most powerful thing that we have in our society today, we are a capitalist society. We're driven by the bottom line. But what drives that is not the government, is not the laws, is not the regulations, you, the consumer, and the dollar bill. How you spend that dollar bill will determine if Nike's going to make t-shirts in this country. And again, I go back and use the model of a triple bottom line. We always says, you know, we could easily make our t-shirts, organic cotton, certified t-shirts in China. We would make more money on the peace side for profit, but we would displace people without jobs. We have a saying, if you go outside of your market for product or service in which your market is delivered, it is not sustainable. We make textiles in North Carolina. We will make textiles in North Carolina. So it's interesting, especially in the apparel industry, and I'll use Patagonia and Nike, both of them are big supporters of organic cotton. Good points, I commend them for that. They make no product in this country. I don't buy their product because of that. But if Patagonia and Nike, and again, I just use them as examples a lot, they're not going to change until you tell them to change because they're interested in their bottom line. But again, at the end of the day, it's the consumer drives this. But then what we also want to do with TS Designs, again, we're Alamance County. So I want to say a more conservative community. And I like to tell a story. This was about 4 or 5 years ago. In the depths of losing a lot of money, Part and I were not getting paid at the time. And we had a monthly meeting with our banker and our accountant. All those gloom and doom meetings because it was like, how much money did you lose last month? And we set this meeting, and we want to put in a 3K solar tracking array. $30,000 or $35,000 investment. So we throw this out to our bank and our accountant. The first thing an accountant always says, well, what's the return on this thing? You know, must think you're going to just save all your money on this electric bill. It says, not one. We can buy it from Duke Power at the time for 7 cents a kilowatt. This thing's going to cost us 35 cents a kilowatt. We're not going to make it on your scale of measure. But if somebody said in the audience today, where does our energy come from? Destroying mountains in West Virginia. So again, we knew if we're going to be in this market, live in this market, survive in this market, we're going to have to walk the talk. So we made the $35,000 commitment with the money we didn't have, money the bank definitely didn't give us. We basically squeezed our vendors out a little bit longer. And what we have found is that was a commitment we made then. Doing things like that, I would say 50% of people do business with us. I mean, they always do business because they want a t-shirt. I mean, that's what we're in business for. But they do business because how we do business. They've heard about, you know, we got a solar array. Next week, we got a wind turbine going up. We've been making biodiesel in our facility for 4 years. We've got a biodiesel co-op there. We've got organic garden for our employees to sign up for. We run our 4.5 acres on a permaculture thing, which we do very little mowing. It's very interesting. We're in industrial and development, which is the typical thing. You mow all the trees down. You plant the building there. You put the 4 Bradford pears in the front there. You mow every other week. We're the guys over there, and we mow right up against the building, but that's sitting in those grass like this. So you always get the landscaping guys that come by during the summer and thought the landscaper got fired. Now, that's how it's supposed to look. It looks better now because the trees have kind of taken over now, and they're better than the weeds. But it's exciting now because in earlier days, people just looked at, you know, you guys are weird. I mean, you know, you don't mow your grass. You got this fancy. They thought it was some type of thing to pick up TV station in your front yard. Well, that's a big satellite dish. But now, and it's interesting, you know, speaking of the chamber next week, is the mainstream people said, first of all, you know, we're one of the few domestic apparel companies that are left in our community. The Burlington Industries, the Guilford Mills, all they're gone. So, you know, the path that we're taking, we are starting to show it works. And people are starting to, you know, take interest in that. And I think not from our employees, our customers. It's just an exciting time to be in business because this is what drives us. Is the philosophy of our business and how we run our business, and I think that will in turn continue to make us successful and grow and things like that. But we've got to change the mindset because it's so interesting when you talk to the elementary kids, the high school kids, to the senior citizen stuff. I always like to use the analogy. We think our gas comes from the gas pump, our food comes from the grocery store, and our clothes come from the mall. Just because we have the dollar bill to buy it doesn't mean it's the right decision, but we are have to become responsible for those purchases. And once you start going down that path, it's an easy discussion. You know, it's easy for me to talk to Whole Foods or Weaver Street about our t-shirts. They know our shirt's going to be more expensive. We don't have to worry about it. They're not going to have sticker shock. Now, I've got to compete with other people selling a similar product. We've got to be competitive. But I don't have to worry about it. They're not going to throw another t-shirt. Well, I can get that for $5 because they're not going to throw up a conventional cotton made offshore t-shirt to compete with. They'll say, well, somebody else can do this here. So, but I can go back and says it is a journey, not a destination. The cotton that we use in our t-shirt comes from Turkey. We grew 825,000 acres of cotton in North Carolina last year, zero organic. So we're in the process of using the Organic Valley model, which is instead of just going to farmers, well, you grow the cotton, it's usually about a three-year transition. You grow the cotton, in 3 years, call me up, I might buy you cotton. Nobody's going to do that. So what we're going to do like Organic Valley, we are now working as a group of us. We've been talking for about a year, I hope our first meeting will be in November, is identify farmers. We've got the manufacturing still in place. We've got the ginners, the knitters, cut and sew, print and dye. We'll identify some retailers. But then we all come together and say, we're going to partner up. And we're going to work with that farmer and make that transition. And so during that 3 years, we're going to be with you. And in the 3 years, we're going to be buying your product. Make that commitment, because I do think things are going to happen very fast. We can see what's happening with petroleum and what's going to happen with climate change. This stuff is shipping stuff all the way around the world. The party's over with, folks. And it's interesting, being in my perspective business, I've been at TS Designs 26 years, let's say, is it how it's transitioned from when I first started. It was all about local and domestic, because that was all it was. Then we were introduced to the global model. Apparel was gone within a couple of years, and now it's starting to come back, and it's coming back because of these things like petroleum issues and climate change, and now, you know, the community issues. So it's exciting to see how it's starting to come back. But it's been an exciting ride as we go down this, but as the community grows, so does the momentum of doing things. But we really like to, at our facility, and you're welcome to come. It's probably 25 miles from here, easy to get to right off the interstate. But we try to push the wind of sustainability, as I said, from our biodiesel to our wind to our solar to our gray water system we put in. And we continue to learn and do new things. So it's been an exciting, it's been a hell of a tough journey. Thank goodness my partner and I both have very supportive wives that kind of, you know, fed us during these times of no paychecks and a lot of work. But now we're starting to see the other benefits. I mean, it's exciting to see the community grow. I mean, I'm going to go to D.C. this weekend. I think Jane's going to be up there. There'll be probably 25,000 people at a two-day show in D.C. And it's one of the biggest green consumer shows in the country. And it started 4 years ago in San Francisco with 13,000. I think San Francisco had like 35. This year we had Chicago, and next year we had Seattle. So, I mean, it's growing not only locally, but whatever, you know, it's we got a long way to go, and we got a lot of path to catch up. But it's been an exciting but challenging path. But I brought brochures if you're interested to know more about our product or process. See if you have any questions. Two main distribution channels. First of all, it would be like a Whole Foods that they're not in the apparel business, but they know they better have the right product. And the interesting thing about the green market, if you go out there and Whole Foods said, we're going to save some money, we're going to give our customers this conventional cotton plastic print t-shirt, it's going to come right back at you. So the Whole Foods, the Greenpeace, Sierra Clubs, Cliff Bar, they understand it. They're not in the apparel business, but they're going to buy the right product. That's one channel. Then we do work for brands that built their whole brand around our product and processes. And a great example of that is Green Label Organics, which now you can buy at REI, Whole Foods, Great Outdoor Provision Company. Exciting company. I mean, started business with them maybe a year and a half ago. Their typical order is maybe 200 pieces. Their typical order now is about 1,500 pieces. I mean, just a phenomenal business, because they basically came on the green growth right at the right time and become a very successful. So it's race. You'll see us at retail, but at retail with Green Label, you will never see our name mentioned. We're doing all the back-end processing, but if you would go to like Whole Foods or Greenpeace and they gave you a shirt, most likely you'd be that's what we're recognized by, our clothing facts, which is an ingredients label, which we have just recently had that trademarked. So it's not copyright, it's trademarked now. I mean, people know what's more about. Anybody in the green market, I mean, Jane, you've probably seen this a bazillion times. I mean, anybody seen this? Yeah, I hope you got a couple of our t-shirts, but that's what we're known from. But those are basically two main areas you would find us.
Will you tell them more about Rehance?
Yes, Rehance is, and we say in the brochure here, it's a process we develop. We have, let's pass it. We got more. We have four patents on it. Essentially, the way most T-shirts are done, normally I wear a T-shirt, I'll dress up for you today. Most T-shirts, what they do, they dye the fabric, they cut and sew it, and they come back and print with this. If you fill your T-shirts, you're going to have this plastic fill to it. That plastic fill you're filling is PVC, polyvinyl chloride. Not a very good plastic to have. We do it just the opposite. What we do, we take all of our, if you come to our facility, you're just going to see a lot of white T-shirts. We print the T-shirts, and then we garment dye everything. So our print's actually in the fabric, not on the fabric. Should have brought a sample to show you, because normally I wear the shirts. But anyway, so that way we eliminate the use of plastisol inks. You get a more durable product because it's not going to shrink. That print's not going to crack. It's not going to peel. You can iron it. And then plus it's organic cotton and it's domestically made. So as we describe, it's the highest quality, most sustainable print apparel on the market. Is that a quick story?
Are there inks that are more or less organic?
Our inks are not organic. No. What happens in the apparel industry, there's some, mainly that you find in third world countries, there's some natural dyes you use out there. The problem you have with natural dyes, you have poor wash fastness, or they're using heavy metals to bond the natural fiber, or natural dyes to the fiber, so heavy metals aren't good to have going into your waste stream. What we're excited about is their standard for, when I say organic cotton, that's how the cotton is grown in the field. But there really hasn't been to recently standards, what do you do to that organic cotton to get into a shirt? You've got to do something to take that raw cotton and get it to a Navy shirt. There was the North American Organic Fiber Standards, which has been recently rolled into the Global Organic Textile Standards, which talk about all the processes and chemicals you can use within that, what kind of dyes, what kind of softeners and stuff like that. We already meet all those standards, but that's what they've done to kind of classify these things you can't use and these things you can use. And it's basically a new standard.
So like all the Mexican tar you see in Oaxaca, mm-hmm. natural
right.
dyes, right?
Right.
So you could get it.
Not with our process, the way it works, the way of printing it and then dyeing it, we use a low-impact reactive dye. Mm-hmm. And again, the nice thing about when you make your own product from the yarn to the finished thing, we look at the overall impact. So to us, the biggest thing for us is the transportation side. So we're more focused right now to improve the impact of the final product is growing the cotton here in North Carolina. That's going to have a bigger impact than spending our time trying to reduce the impact of the dyes. I mean, everything we do, people says, you know, how can I reduce my dye? I said, don't buy clothes, just sit around naked. But I mean, I don't know if society's ready for that. But again, that's nice. We just look at the total impact of the finished product, and go after the big pieces. And that's why we brought most of it back to North Carolina, except the yarn itself, and that's what we're working on now.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I heard this on the radio today. Organic cotton is good sound bite, but does North Carolina really have enough water to be growing cotton?
Well, especially this year. I mean, you know, it is a very water-intensive crop. I mean, they produce a lot in eastern North Carolina. I don't know. I mean, long-term, I don't know, especially after something like different. But, I mean, then you get into the get me on my hemp soapbox.
What's a hemp soapbox?
Hemp. You know what hemp is? Hemp's a weed.
Yes, okay.
The U.S. is the only industrialized country that doesn't allow the growing of hemp because of it's wrong association of marijuana.
And if it was up to you, we would grow hemp?
Yeah, because hemp requires very little inputs. It takes, I mean, bugs don't like it. It's a weed. I mean, you can grow about anywhere. You grow it, I mean.
It's just, really fast.
Yeah.
You probably make vitamins.
Well, the nice
thing.
Yeah, you know, the oil from it, stuff like that. It's a great overall product. I've got a couple pair of hemp jeans, of course, they're made in China. But think about a pair of hemp jeans, you might outgrow them, but you won't outwear them. A cotton jeans, you can out, I mean, it's a more durable fiber. But again, we're the only industrialized country not allowed to grow a hemp. It's BS because it's the DEA Association of Marijuana. I've got a friend in Canada, the Canadian government basically gave him the land to grow the hemp to put him in business. The Canadian government did that. I think now we're up to 14 states that have allowed the industrialization of hemp. But you waste your money. Until the DEA, the feds, it's the same, you know, marijuana in California, until you get the DEA off of it. It'd be great for our tobacco farmers.
Yeah, yeah, that's
but,
good.
But what about
it was
bamboo?
Legal in this country also until
child World War II.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It's what just, about it's, bamboo? They're making a cotton-like fabric out of bamboo.
Well, the problem you have with bamboo, bamboo is very similar to rayon, very similar to tencel. You have to break the fiber down. And the problem I have with, I mean, it's a great feeling problem, it's a great story, but most of the bamboo is coming out of China. And my discussion with the people is when you talk to them, they says, we do it in an environmentally friendly way. And I says, okay, what is it? Says, well, it's proprietary. Well, that doesn't quite cut. I want to know what you're doing. It can be done that way, but if it's not done in a closed-loop system, it's a very damaging.
Breaking down.
Yeah, you got to break the bamboo fiber down and extrude it out.
And then make the
right.
fabric.
Does it take a lot of water to grow cotton?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We see it
yes.
grow mainly in the sand hills when we go down the
yes.
road. That's a very dry area.
Very water and chemical intensive product.
It's almost always irrigated.
It don't have the water.
Yeah.
Eric, can I ask you what both of you? You talked about doing this 12 years ago and before with POC, and now you're trying to live with the consumer and to pay money for that. Where do you see that going? Are folks, you think it's going to shift heavily? This is just a little bit? I mean, I sort of joke that my wife will buy gummy bears if they're organic. It must be different for you. And so they built a brand around that, but are folks going to choose their restaurants based on, I mean, you all run advertisements that have nothing to do with your lobster, but all about your civic participation. And you've built an incredible brand around, I mean, we bought your t-shirts for the first time, we got the thing. I don't know if anybody cares whether they're any good. They do like whether or not what you've done with them.
I hope they're good.
But people, like you said, they're buying them because of
right.
how you're making them.
Right.
Not whether or not your sense where you see it that's coming big or it's going to come small or...
I guess I think we feel like it's going to be big. I think that we've made a commitment to buying things locally. Now we've made a commitment to building a restaurant in a way that is more environmentally friendly than 99% of the restaurants out there at this point. I think we do believe in it very strongly. And I think that it will be not only a differentiating factor for us, but is something that is the right thing for us to do as well. So it's part of that, what are you willing to sacrifice? But it's also, what are the things that are important to do? And I think, so that, in as much as we need a sustainable business and a business that will continue to make a profit and all the reasons that people are in business, we want to do it in a way that we also believe in. So.
Can I just add to that? I think the idea of choice and choice is the driver, which you mentioned earlier, I think is huge. And I think that speaks to what you're saying. There was a report that you sent me, actually. It's the Goldman Sachs Sustain Report. It's a very extensive report about corporations. I did a lot of research. As I recall, the number one choice driver, was social issues. So this is a Wall Street report talking that social issues are really becoming the driver. So I hope that's true, and I hope that your story is multiplying 100 times.
Well, we say two comments on that. First thing we say, our best customer is an educated customer. Because once they're educated, we can have a conversation. If they're not educated, we're back to the Walmart thing where cheaper price is better. And being a small company, we don't have the money, the time, the personnel. We can't educate the mass market like that. We got to go after niches and stuff. The other thing, as somebody mentioned at Lyle's keynote thing, is that unfortunately we live in a false economy. I mean, people bitch and complain at $3 gas, but what are we spending in Iraq now? Billions of dollars a week. Now, you can talk about whatever you want to, but bottom line, we're there for one reason. They got something we don't have. We import over 60% of our oil. The same thing, we got cheap electric. You have Duke Energy down here as your power bill? Well, they say we're 25% cheaper energy bill. But what in the hell are they doing up in West Virginia? I mean, but there's no association. So, we live in a world of a false economy. We're not paying the true cost, as Lyle was saying, the stuff that we're pulling out of here, the energy we're pulling, we're not paying the full price. So, yeah, yeah. Were you the one talking about yesterday or somebody earlier says, some places mean that. You just pay a flat rate. So who cares if your hose is broken, your toilet runs all the time? Yeah. Right. Yes.
Real quickly, from a percentage standpoint, what's the price to a regular T-shirt I get at American Apparel to maybe a T-shirt? 30%, 20%?
Well, I'll break it down,
without factoring in the true cost of the product just right now.
Well, if you take a conventional cotton to organic cotton, that's probably about $1.50. Is it wholesale cost? $1.50 to the cost. And then the making it domestically made offshore is about another 50 cents. So those two components are adding about $2. Our processes compared to printing a t-shirt, I mean, there's not that much difference. It's in the organic cotton is your biggest hit, which is about 25%.
Retail? $2 more wholesale?
Wholesale. I mean, that's what it says. You can buy a conventional cotton made offshore printed t-shirt, $5 to $6 range, where ours is going to be in the $10 range. Mm-hmm. So,
just one more thing that I wanted to add to your question about, you know, is this going to be big or not? The other part of MEZ that I'd like to be able to tell you, but I can't, is that when you go out to look at that restaurant, you'll see that it's part of a almost 3-acre development. And there's a small little retail component associated with the restaurant. And the retail part isn't going to be LEED certified, and in part that was a decision by the developer partner that he didn't feel like the additional investment to make it certified was going to be reaped in increased rents and be able to be, that people, their tenants, weren't going to care about it. I think as a restaurant group, I think that my sense is that, you know, people who could potentially be tenants out there, Starbucks actually is going to take a spot. But my guess is that they would have been even more favorable for it if we had been able to say, oh, and by the way, you're going to be taking a space in a LEED certified project. And that we would be able to market not only our restaurant as a LEED certified product, but also the center itself as being a fully LEED certified thing. And I think that that would have also attracted, you know, that might have attracted massage therapists who, you know, are environmentally friendly, or, you know, dry cleaners like H2 Only may have been interested in going there and taking a spot, even if they didn't, you know, if they had a choice between that center and another one, they might have chosen us because it was had a LEED certification and it fit with whatever their corporate culture is. And so, you know, I do think that it is something that's going to be continuing to increase. I do wish the other part were LEED certified, but
you know, our choices, they have to be made. Our building is going to be LEED certified, and we've gotten significant recognition as a result of that. So there's a tangible market value out there. It also, I think I said this earlier, my opinion is this is really the tip of the iceberg. And Thomas Friedman, who wrote the Globus Flat, called it the perfect storm for green.
Yep.
And he talks about global climate change, talks about the war in Iraq and what we're really paying for.
Right.
And the third piece, the triple of the perfect storm, is the huge opportunity for job development.
Yep.
It's not something you can outsource. It's innovative, it's technology-based, it's knowledge-based, that's America's sweet spot. And so these three things coming together, he says, it's the perfect storm. And I'll just end by saying, he says, we don't need a red president, we don't need a blue president.
A green president.
We need a green president.
Yep. Very true.
And what if we have the right kind of leadership in this country around this issue?
Are you familiar with the Apollo Project?
What?
The Apollo Project?
Yes, vaguely.
Well, essentially, it's been out there for years. A lot of people don't know about it. I mean, it's the same thing that Kennedy did, saying 10 years we won't put a man on the moon. This say 10 years we won't be energy independent. And instead of pouring all this money for imported oil or all these other resources, we're going to commit to be an energy independent in 10 years, and that's going to do exactly what you said. That's going to create jobs here. It's going to bring technology here, and that's all national security too. Because I mean, I always say if you're dependent on an outside resource for your livelihood, water, food, fuel, you cannot go out and get it. As we're realizing now, so it's in. But I feel sorry for the politicians today because they really don't want to wrestle with the hard decisions, because the uneducated people don't really want to know that the things we have to do. We have to start conserving more. You know, just the path that they really have to go down with, I mean, they're just, people really don't want to hear that. It's a tough nut we got to crack in Kazunheim. The longer we wait, the tougher it's going to be to crack.
Did you say you were adding wind power to your?
Yeah, but it's a thousand watt. Wind's not good around here. We just got a good deal on it and we decided to do it. I always tell people if I work for a Fortune 500 company, they'd fire me a long time ago. Because I'm not going to show you results in 30 days or 6 months or whatever.
Gary's name off. Yeah. You're not getting an equity.
No, it's a 1,000-watt wind turbine. It'll start producing, it's called Wild DC. It basically dumps everything to a battery bank that's coming off our solar array. It'll start producing at 7, but it basically it will not start producing 1,000. It's like 25 miles an hour. So, I mean, it's
how big are the blades?
I want to say it's only like a 6-foot diameter. I mean, it's a toy. It's on a 65-foot tower. Again, we just wanted to, it's more for an educational purpose when these school kids, can, you know, you can take that and make this light bulb work over here. They just don't have, you know, they're just going throwing a switch and light comes on.
Can you tell you a quick story of your body? Is it possible to tell this group or the last group passage?
No, I haven't told them this. The one we're putting in with Piedmont?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the world's first.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. We make biodiesel, or have made biodiesel at TS Designs for 4 years. And it's a small co-op, but the fuel is only made for the co-op. We've partnered up with Piedmont Biofuels to put a biodiesel station because, again, I couldn't get anybody in Alamance County that wanted to put it at a retail place. So we went to the city and had it rezoned for a place about twice the size of this table here so we can have commercial or consumer traffic come onto our property. But what we're building there, it's a white building, and it's this aerated concrete. It's real light concrete. It has thermal mass, essentially keep cause biodiesel will gel at colder temperatures.
Is it AAC?
Yes, aerated concrete, yes. Has a set roof panel, glass, south-facing. But it will be card swipe, so it'll be open 724. We're 2 miles from the highway. And when you cut on that pump to pump that fuel, the power's coming from the solar array. So it will be one of the first that I know of, fully automatic, 724, green-built, renewable-powered B100 stations. So that'll be right, we'll be right in front of our place. And again, it's interesting, people says biodiesel T-shirt. What the heck does that have to do with it? And again, it's supporting our community because somebody's going to pay $3.50, which used to be expensive. Now it's about what diesel fuel cost. But if you understand that, you might not be an interest for T-shirts, but you understand why our product's different. So it's again, we're supporting our community.
We can wrap up. Okay. There's like a couple final questions, or if the gentleman have final comments he'd like to make. And again, we'll when we get this from Joseph, we'll post it on our site and. You'll be able to tell your friends and they can click and hear. Because for me, this has been a fascinating, particularly the business-led version of this. That, you know, the Sierra, you know, 10 years ago, we'd have the Sierra Club
right.
Sit here and tell us what we're doing wrong. And then this model of y'all are doing it and it's working for you and you're making money at it and the customer cares.
Well, it's going to, I mean, in our economy, it's going to be driven by business because that's, at the end of the day, that's what drives our economy. I mean, laws are good, politicians are good, whatever, but at the end of the day, business drives it. So we got to change them within.
I still, cotton things bother me. Isn't there another, I mean, I love, it's my favorite, I wear cotton all the time, but isn't there an alt, can't you buy hemp from your friend in Canada?
Well, I could buy it from China, too.
What's the difference between buying hemp from China and cotton from Turkey?
Well, what we want to do is get this, product in its lowest common denominator, bring the yarn in and build for that. And basically hemp's not good, really, it's a shorter staple fiber, so it's not really that good for T-shirts because you can't get it that soft. It's better for jeans and wovens, which we don't do. So cotton is better for what we do than hemp would be. You would have to blend it with cotton to make it a product that you would want to wear.
What about recycled polyester?
That's a possibility. Probably a lot of that stuff, even if you look at the percent of recycled, it's a small percent of what the overall product. They still mix a lot of virgin in with it. And again,
virgin
a lot of
polyester.
Yes.
What about when they take like what Patagonia?
Y'all might have to take this off.
That's right.
Go ahead. One
yeah.
more.
Yeah. Okay. One more time. Yeah.
Like what Patagonia
yeah,
does.
Yeah. Kathleen.
Yep. They take milk bottles and mm-hmm. make it into a nice. You know, I have a T-shirt that's polyester, and you would swear it's cotton. No.
But that's. Polyester has different performance characteristics than cotton.
So that's what you want. That's
well, I mean, people. Well, I mean, matter of fact, we've not had any success with it. Patagonia says they're doing it. I'm in conversations. So what are you doing with it? Because it'd be great to partner up with them because they've got retail stores. Then we could say our customers take it to them. I'm trying to find out what they do.